You are listening to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Today we are talking all things crime with best-selling authors Ellie Griffiths and Dorothy Coombson, hearing about the Brighton crime wave with Julia Crouch and William Shaw, chatting to emerging author Michael Hanson-Kahn and Katerina Hendricks, who runs a domestic noir book club at the Jubilee Library. This month's book club is My Sister the Serial Killer by Oyin Khan Braithwaite, published by One World. If you missed last month's show, where I spoke to Bethan Roberts, Paul Simmons and Sarah Ozo-Iribor about books and music in books and books about music, have a listen on the podcast, which is available wherever you get yours. As always, you can contact us on social media. I'm on Twitter at Anna M. Burt. We're on Instagram at BTN Book Club. And you can email us at btnbookclub@gmail.com.
Who was a nice, sweet child, quite a vulnerable person, constantly battles against the evil side who's trying to take control.
And where are you currently at with publication?
Yeah, well, it's difficult when you haven't been published, so it is a constant round of submitting and doing your research, finding out who you think out there will want your work, and getting rejections, trying to improve on what you've written, and constantly rewriting again. So at the moment, I'm in a bit of a non-place. I'm doing those submissions, I'm getting rejections, some of them sounding quite positive and encouraging, others you don't hear back from at all. So it's that long slog at the moment. I just keep slogging away at it.
What is it like to be a writer in Brighton? What do you think are the good things about being a writer here?
In Brighton, the wonderful things are you've got such an eclectic mix of people and so many people, who do so many artistic and different things that it spurs you on. And I do thoroughly believe that if I hadn't been in Brighton, I would never actually have undertaken writing. It's because friends of mine have written. I'm a good friend of Robert Dickinson, who's a local writer. And seeing the things he's done, learning off him, has encouraged me to do that as well. It's also brought out another artistic side in me, which is I'm in a band. I form my own band. It's an indie punk band. We're called Brighton Strangler. Look us up on brightonstrangler.com. I've got an album out there. Come and see us if you like that sort of thing.
What is your writing routine?
My writing routine, well, it's very much trying to get a routine as often as not, because I do try to do at least 400 words a day. Often things get in the way of that, or you try and make excuses, but constantly trying to keep writing is important. I also have lots of friends on Facebook and Instagram who are very encouraging, various writers groups, and we encourage each other to keep going at it, to keep writing, to say when you've done your amount of words or got to the target you wanted to. But the most important thing is sometime during the day to get some words down or to do some revision or something.
What would you say is the best piece of advice as a writer you've ever been given?
The best piece of advice is to write what I think is probably to write what you know about, what you've experienced, etc. And that's an interesting one, because in my former working career, I used to work for an organisation called NACRO, which is about the care and resettlement of offenders. Through that, I met a lot of offenders. I worked in Lewis Prison on the wings as well. Heard lots and lots of stories. That's partly why I write about crime, the things that people told me, things that you can hardly believe sometimes. So it is what I know about. I'm not making it up. It's from experience, things people have told me. And if you write from experience, it's always going to feel a lot more real.
I'd love to ask you a million more questions about that, but we don't have time today. So before you go, how can we follow your progress?
I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, etc. I do need to post more on Facebook, and I do need to do more on Twitter. I've also got a blog on my band website, which was brightonstrangler.com, which I regularly update on band activities, but also on writing activities as well. I must do more of that, so yeah.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Okay, thank you.
We'll be back with Dorothy Coombson after this song. Welcome back to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Best-selling author of 16 novels, Dorothy Coombson is with me in the studio.
Hello,
Dorothy.
Hello.
Welcome to the Brighton Book Club. Can you introduce yourself for us, please?
Now, see, this is really hard. I don't like to talk about myself. I do, actually. I'm just lying. my name is Dorothy Coombson, and I've written 16 books, as you said. My latest book is, the one that's on sale at the moment, is called Tell Me Your Secret, and it's the story of a woman who, well, it's two women, really. One of them is kidnapped 10 years before the story starts, the book starts, and held for a weekend by someone called the Blindfolder, who says he won't kill her if she manages to keep her eyes closed for the whole weekend. She manages to do that and gets on with her life, doesn't tell anybody what happens. 10 years later, she meets somebody who says that not only has the Blindfolder, the man who kidnapped her and held her for the weekend, but he's also going back and killing the people who had managed to escape in the first time round. Also, the other person in the book is called Jody, and she's a police officer. And 15 years before the book starts, she made a mistake that ended up with a Blindfolder going free. So now she's determined to find him and to bring him to justice or do something else to him.
That literally sounds so good. Can you read us some, please?
I will read you the prologue.
Thank you.
Okay. Prologue. If you want to survive this weekend, there is only one thing you must do. Keep your eyes closed. For 48 hours, you must not open your eyes. If you do open your eyes, I will end you. No matter what you feel or hear, you must not open your eyes, not even for the briefest of seconds. If you do as I ask, I will release you and you can go back to your ordinary little life. It's really that simple. Do you understand? I'm going to take off this blindfold in a few moments, but before I do, nod if you understand. Come on, just a little nod to show you know what I'm talking about. A nod. That's it. That's right. Thank you. Now our weekend together can begin.
That is the most sinister beginning of a book I've heard for such a long time. Where did you get your inspiration for it?
I got my inspiration, I think, from the idea of who is allowed to be a victim in today's society. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there are so many women who bad things happen to them, but because they've got a bit of a history, they drink or they smoke or they, you know, they're promiscuous, they're not taken seriously. They're not allowed to be victims. People question them before they start to feel empathy for them for what they've been through. So I wanted to write a story. I mean, everybody in the book has a history and they're not perfect and they're not what we think women should be. Mm-hmm. And that's where the story came from, basically. I wanted to write about women who aren't perfect, who bad things happen to them, and what happens when something, when they tell people about what's happened to them.
You wrote your first novel at 13.
Yes, well, my first book, I was 13. Yes, I decided I was going to try and write a book, and I wrote this fantastic. It was great. It was called There's a Thin Line Between Love and Hate, and it was about a woman, a girl who lived in America, whose parents had split up and her mum had left, and she didn't get with her dad, and had all these dramas with boys at school. I mean, none of this had happened to me. I hadn't been to America at that point. My parents were together forever. No boyfriend, but, you know, in my head, I created this world and I started from there and haven't stopped, really.
Can you tell us, please, a bit about your journey to publication? Because you started writing romance books, is that right?
Well, yes, I wrote romantic comedies. My first two books were romantic comedies, and then I moved on to writing what I call weepies, which made people cry. And then I went on to write The Ice Cream Girls, which kind of became a whodunit from the story I wanted to tell. And I've kind of kept on in that vein. But there was always still a thread of romance in my books. And there's a little bit of humour, I hope. And so I haven't sort of like moved into one genre, as it were. I kind of moved into... My books kind of have progressed and they've got more sinister. But the next book that's coming out in July 2020, All My Lies Are True, is not as sinister as Tell Me Your Secret, which I think scared a lot of people.
How do you do your research?
I do all sorts of things. I do a lot of reading, and then I talk to people. I find people to talk to who've been through the things that I write about, so I can give some authenticity to what I write about. For my other book, The Brighton Mermaid, there's a bit where the main character is sort of put on the bottom of, in the back of a car, a people carrier. So I got one of my friends to drive me around on the floor of the people carrier.
That's dedication to the cause.
An idea of what it was like. So I do all sorts of things for research.
So a lot of your books are set in Brighton. Most of your books are set in Brighton.
Yes.
Have you found out anything really juicy about Brighton that we might not know?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you if I had. No. I find out all sorts of different things about Brighton, and it's really weird going round and seeing it through the characters' eyes, because I mean, obviously I create different, there are things I make up to, I mean, there's areas where people live in my books that obviously don't exist, but there are other places where they do exist, and I do drive past and I do say to people, oh yeah, such and such lives there and that such and such lived there. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a really nice thing to have a city that you know to write about, which is why I write about Brighton mainly. I write about Leeds as well, because I used to live in Leeds, and so I bring that into it. I've been to Birmingham a few times, so I bring in Birmingham a few times. But I think when you live somewhere, it's so much easier to write about with authenticity and, you know, the little shortcuts, you know, and the things that changed over time.
Absolutely. What does it mean to you, Dorothy, to be a writer in Brighton and be part of that community?
It's great. I mean, it's great to be a writer anywhere, really, because like I said, I have lived in London, and my first few books were written when I was in London. My fourth book, Marshmallows for Breakfast, I wrote that when I lived in Australia and Sydney. So for me, you know, being a writer is great anywhere. I do love living in Brighton and living near the sea, and there are lots of writers down here, and they're, you know, quite a supportive community. So it's great, yes.
Especially the crime writing community, I find, is particularly supportive.
Yeah, cause because I write sort of different types of book, you know, also different elements in my books, I do know lots of people from different, who write different types of books. So, but there are loads of great writers down here.
What is the best piece of advice you would give to someone who's embarking on writing a crime novel?
The same I give to anybody writing any type of novel, just stop talking about it and write it.
That's really good. Dorothy, how can we follow you on social media, and are you doing any events soon that we should know about?
Yes, I'm doing a few events. There's one in London I'm doing on the 14th of March, 15th of March, 15th of March, in London, called Killer Women. And that's a whole day of fantastic writers talking and about their writing processes and crime books. And on the 19th of March, Thursday the 19th of March, I'm doing Crawley Word Fest. Yes, up in Crawley, obviously. And that's going to be great, because another panel with William Shaw, who I think you're going to talk to later. And I think I've got another couple of, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
But we can find them on your website.
You can find my website. I've got www.dorothycoombson.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter and Facebook, Dorothy Coombson. On most of them, I'm Dorothy Coombson, and Instagram. I'm pretty much all over the internet. You can find me if you want to.
Thank you very much for coming on, Dorothy.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I am joined in the studio by Ellie Griffiths, who is fresh off her tour from promoting her new book, The Lantern Man. Ellie, welcome to the studio.
Hi, lovely to be here.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself, please?
Okay, well, I'm Ellie Griffiths. I'm the author of 23 books.
23 books.
19 of which are crime. And the first four, though, are written under my real name, which is Domenica De Rosa, which I know sounds completely made up, but is in fact my real name.
It's very exotic.
Well, thank you. It's Italian. It means Sunday of the Rose, which is rather nice, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I've lived in Brighton since I was five, so I guess anyone from Brighton will know me by that name.
Can we talk a bit about your journey to publication? When did you start writing? Because you used to work in publishing, is that right?
Yes, I did. I worked for HarperCollins as an editor for quite a long time, as a children's books editor. But it was great listening to Dorothy earlier, because I wrote my first book when I was 11.
Did you? And, yeah. And what was that about?
Well, it was called The Hair of the Dog, which must have been something my parents talked about, I guess. But it was set in Rottingdean, which is really near where I still live. And it was about a group of people in a little village where nothing much happened. So they decide to stage a fake murder, which turns into a real murder, which, you know, obviously it was never published, but I don't think that's a bad premise for an 11-year-old, do you?
No. So you were clearly thinking about crime and murder from a young age.
I was. You know, I always wrote. I used to write little episodes of Starsky and Hutch when I was at school.
Wow.
I was at Cardinal Newman in Hove, and I used to write these little episodes of Starsky and Hutch. And I remember one week I killed Starsky, which was a shame, really, because he's my favourite. And I remember when people were reading it, these used to be kind of passed round in class. And I remember that people started to cry. And I really liked that. I really liked that I could make them cry. And it's a bit, again, what Dorothy was saying about, you know, you suddenly think, oh, maybe I can make people laugh, or I can make them cry, or I can make them a bit scared.
Just having that impact on an audience.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling, really.
Did you ever want to do anything else apart from be a writer?
Well, I guess I really enjoyed being a books editor. Mm. And if I hadn't been, you know, a writer, that's where I would have stayed, really. But I did have a few acting ambitions when I was young. My grandfather was an actor, and I think I would have liked that. I'm sure I didn't have the talent, but, you know, there is obviously a repressed actor in me somewhere.
Let's talk about Ruth Galloway. Who is Ruth Galloway, and what are the Ruth Galloway novels?
Well, Dr. Ruth Galloway, she likes to be called Doctor, so I'll call her that. Dr. Ruth Galloway is a forensic archaeologist, which is a real job. Archaeologists are often called in by the police when they find sort of buried bodies. She lives in North Norfolk on the edge of beautiful but desolate marshland. She teaches at a made-up university called the University of North Norfolk. I know you know Norfolk well, and this is
totally
made up, not like the real university in Norwich. And one day she's... goes into work and she finds a police officer waiting for her. He's DCI Harry Nelson, and he wants to ask her advice on bones that are found on marshland near Ruth's house. And those particular bones turn out to be over 2,000 years old. Oh. But Ruth is drawn into the case, which is that of a murdered child, and into what has become a very complicated relationship with the policeman, DCI Harry Nelson. And I'm now on book 12, so... The Lantern Men is book 12 about Ruth and Nelson, and now quite a large sort of surrounding cast of characters. And this book actually starts with Ruth in a new place. She's moved to Cambridge. She has a new job. She has a new man. But it's not long before the dark shape of Harry Nelson appears, and she ends up going back to Norfolk.
So every time you write a book, do you know there's more... Like, is there ever an end? And how do you keep coming up with fresh, new, interesting ideas?
Well, part of that is Norfolk, really. I write another series set in Brighton, which was equally rich, really, in locations. But Norfolk has so many wonderful places and so many spooky, eerie legends. The Lantern Men, for example, are these figures that haunt the North Norfolk marshes and the fens, and they're dark shapes, hooded shapes that carry lanterns at night. Of course, if you follow their light, you're doomed. So there's so many different stories. I think that's, for me, that's what's helped keep the series fresh in my mind.
Can we talk a bit about your Brighton series?
Yes. So this series starts off in 1950s Brighton. The first book in the series is called The Zigzag Girl. They're called The Brighton Mysteries. And they're about... a musical magician, a variety magician called Max Mephisto, and a police officer called Edgar Stevens, who served together in the war. And I wanted to write about this world because my granddad, as I think I said earlier, was in music hall. He was a comedian, Dennis Laws, he was called, if anyone knows of him. And he left me his playbills, and I began to be obsessed with the names on them. There were things like... Lou Lenny and her unrideable mule.
Oh, wow.
And Petrova's performing ponies, and Ray Deeney, the gay deceiver. And I wanted to write about these people. So The Brighton Mysteries starts in that world of the last days of musical, really. But the most recent book, which is out last year, out in paperback in April, is called Now You See Them. And that's set in 1964. So the series has come right up to the 60s. And of course, 1964 in Brighton, mods and rockers.
Absolutely amazing. Do you have any really good Brighton trivia or gossip or stories that you found out that while researching these books that we might not know?
Well, there's a lot of really interesting stuff about Brighton, especially in these periods, really. One of the things that always strikes me is how many tunnels there are in Brighton. My husband used to work at Brighton Museum, and there's a tunnel, obviously, from the Dome to the Pavilion, another one from the Pavilion to the Theatre Royal, and another one to the what's now the YMCA building, but where Maria Fitzherbert once lived. So I think it's a wonderful thought that you could almost walk the length of Brighton underground if you so wished.
What does it mean for you, Ellie, to be a bright writer in Brighton?
I think Brighter should catch on, really.
Yes.
Well, it's a brilliant place to be a writer. As I say, I've lived in Brighton since I was five, apart from a little period when I lived in London and was at university. It's a great thing. I think there's something about living near the sea that really makes you creative, and it's a really important thing to me. But of course, as we were talking about earlier, there's a wonderful, you know, community of Brighton writers, particularly crime writers. And if your listeners could see the room, we have some of the best crime writers in Brighton currently squatting on your floor. There's Julia Crouch and William Shaw. And there's so many. Colette Macbeth lives in Brighton. Leslie Thompson lives in Lewes. Mm-hmm. There's so many brilliant sort of crime writers around Brighton. And we are very, you know, we're very very collegiate. We're a real community, and that's brilliant.
There doesn't seem to be the kind of competitiveness that there often is with different types of fiction, or even poetry perhaps, or literary fiction. I've always thought that crime writers were some of the warmest, writing some of the darkest stuff, but some of the warmest, most lovely people I've ever worked with.
Well, that's a lovely thing to say, and I shouldn't be agreeing with you, but I am agreeing with you, because I think also possibly because we get out all that dark stuff in our books, and our books are quite dark for such lovely people. We write some quite dark books, but actually there doesn't seem to be much competition between us. So I think we all know how hard it is to be published, and we're genuinely pleased for ourselves. And I must admit that when a Brighton writer has a big hit, I'm really pleased for the team, really.
Yes.
I want to shout, seagulls!
What tips would you give to someone who's looking to start writing crime novels?
Well, I guess it's the same that you would give any person wanting to write any sort of novel, and Dorothy is quite right. The first one is just start writing.
Yes.
Somebody once said to me very early on in my writing career that you can fix a bad page, but you can't fix a blank page.
Yeah, very true.
Which I think you just get the words out there. I try to write 1,000 words a day. So try to write every day. Try and write a different 1,000 words every day. That's hard sometimes. And I guess the thing that I say that might sound a bit controversial is I wouldn't show it to too many people. I wouldn't show it to your family and friends, for example. Maybe show it to a couple of trusted advisors, but I don't show my books to anyone until they're done.
That's really, and why is that? Is that because you're worried that people might put you off, or it might stop your flow?
I think for all those things, of course, everyone's different. But for me, I wouldn't want to hear too many voices saying, oh, maybe that should be first person, maybe that should be third person. Yeah. It's your book.
Yeah.
So I would say finish it and then think about that. But the first person to see my book is always my editor, and I don't show it to anyone on the way.
Should we give a shout out to your publisher?
Yeah, publisher's Quercus. My editor's Jane Wood, who's edited all my books. And they've been fantastic, wonderfully supportive.
Ellie, thank you so much for coming on the show. How can we find and follow you and see you live at any events coming up?
Well, you can follow me on Facebook as Ellie Griffiths, and Twitter and Instagram the same. I do quite a lot of events, so watch out for my website and Facebook for those. But I shall be at Heffers in Cambridge on the 14th of March. And I too will be at the wonderful Killer Women Festival in London on the 15th. It's a whole day of amazing crime tops curated by a group of killer women, of which I am one and Julia Crouch is another.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
We are riding the Brighton crime wave with Julia Crouch and William Shaw, two very successful authors of crime and domestic noir. Julia, William, welcome to the studio.
Hi, thanks for having us.
No worries. Would you like to introduce yourselves before you tell us a bit more about crime wave?
I'm Julia Crouch, and I write what I have called domestic noir, which has rather caught on as a phrase. It's about the terrible things we do to one another in the name of love. I've written five novels. I'm working on my sixth. My most recent novel was called Her Husband's Lover. And my first novel, Cuckoo, I'm currently working on a television adaptation. So that's a kind of a diversion for me, but I'm really, really enjoying that too.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you finding are the big differences between writing a novel and writing a screenplay?
The novel kind of fits very well with the television format because I've got 5 or 6 hours of screen time to play with. But I'm also drawing out the stories of even the more peripheral characters. I have to flesh them out much more because the actors obviously have to embody them. So that's great fun. I write very visually anyway, so I'm really enjoying the fact that, you know, I start my novels with playing the movie in my head. I write it down, and now I'm kind of pulling that back up into the movie in my head again and moving it into kind of televisual language. So yeah, it's a really exciting way of working for me.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. William, how about you?
I'm William Shaw. I've written my seventh paperback is just out, and that's a paperback called Deadland. And my eighth one comes out in May, which is called Gravesend, and they're set in Kent around Dungeness. And they're all deeply, deeply, deeply creepy detective fiction.
You crime writers literally write so much. I can't get my head around it. There are so many words between all of you. You both have got together to create the Brighton Crime Wave. Can you tell us about that, please?
Well, I called it on Twitter the other day, possibly the best roughly bi-monthly crime writing event in Brighton.
I'd obviously lose the possibly in that sentence.
Yes, I think it is uniquely the best, isn't it?
And we've been doing it. I'm trying to work out how many years we've been doing it now, but it must be like 3 or 4 years, is it?
Yep. Yeah, we've been. And the reason behind it was that we decided that because, as we've already discovered on the wonderful interviews you've been doing on this programme, Brighton is a hotbed of crime writing. We have so many crime writers down here. We have lots of writers, but for some reason, lots of us are drawn to crime. I don't know whether Peter James was leading the way with his oeuvre, but certainly, you know, I think it's because Brighton has a kind of this kind of holiday, feel-good place kind of surface, and underneath there's this kind of rather dark and seamy underbelly. So I think that kind of metaphorically translates into all of our work. And we thought it'd be a really nice idea to actually have some of the really top cream of crime writing, international crime writing talent, come down here occasionally. Because after all, we're only a short train ride from London. So that was the thinking behind it. And we also have what we call the grilling.
Yeah, we also, what we want to do is mix established writers and then get debuts and use the established writers to draw some attention onto the debuts. And what's really interesting about Brighton is, as you've probably noticed, there's a lot going on here. So actually trying to persuade people out to come to a crime event is quite an interesting thing. Even when you have those brilliant writers, it's like harder in Brighton to get people to turn up. So over the years, what we've been building up is a real dedicated audience. So we know we can get 50 or 60 people in a room to come and listen to a crime writer. Quite often we sell out, so there's more than that people trying to get in, because, you know, that is about creating a sense of excitement around those people, especially to get that attention on the new people.
Can you name drop some cool people you've had on?
I always forget. Yeah, John Connolly. Yeah. Who else have we had? The big ones. Tess Gerritsen. Ellie
Jane
Griffiths.
Jane Harper. Ellie Griffiths.
Loads of them. I mean, honestly, it's been going on.
Nikki French.
Yeah. Well
yes.
done, thank you. yeah, who haven't we had on?
Yeah, nobody.
but yeah, it's great to find a format that really works and people feel confident, because it's actually a lot of work for crime writers when they come out, when they're on a tour. They need to know there's something they're going to enjoy and there's going to be an audience who are really receptive to them. So our kind of job is to build that up and to make people you know, really responsive to them, but also to make new people who are coming along trying to get into crime really feel welcome in that audience.
Yeah, and I think that if anything, we have a USP. It's about being very laid back, great fun, and we like to draw things out of the writers, don't we? We kind of just like to make everyone feel relaxed.
Yeah, there's free wine, which helps.
Yeah, it does help.
Free wine does help. And you do it at Brighton Waterstones, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. With Richard, who's the most amazing events manager at Waterstones.
We're going to get Richard on the show.
Oh, brilliant.
Soon.
He's fantastic. So good. Yeah, yeah.
So when is the next one and who can we see then?
Well, it's actually coming up very soon. On Tuesday, the 17th of March, mm-hmm. we have a double evening of crime writers Emily Elgar and Stephanie Roble, who write in the domestic noir sort of genre. And as our grilling, we have Matt Osman, who he's a debut crime author, but many people will know him as the
bass player in Suede. And so actually, in some ways, he probably doesn't need the light shining on him that much, but it's a bit of fun. But
it's
also
a different kind of light, though, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And his book is fabulous. It's a really great crime book. And mm-hmm. that's always deeply annoying when somebody who's always really successful in one world crosses over so well.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a few of them on here, and it's like, well, can you just leave some talent for the rest of us?
Thank you.
Guys, how can we find and follow Brighton Crime Wave?
We're actually on Twitter. That's the best place to find us. It's at Brighton Crime Wave. It's at BTN Crime Wave, all one word. So that's where we post all of our upcoming events and links to the Waterstones site where you can book a ticket.
And also Facebook, which is Facebook... Yes. Brighton Crime Wave. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show, guys. We will see you at Brighton Crime Wave. And will you come back again to talk about your books?
Yes, we'd love to.
Excellent.
Yes.
We'll be back after this song. I am joined in the studio by Katerina Hendricks, who runs a domestic noir book club at the Jubilee Library. Katerina, welcome to the Brighton Book Club.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your research and the book club, and what is domestic noir for people that we heard a bit from Julia Crouch earlier, but what do you see domestic noir as a genre?
As you said, my name is Katerina Hendricks. I'm a PhD student at the University of Sussex. I've been there for 2 years now, and I'm researching domestic noir, its history, where it's come from, why is it so popular again today, who writes it and who reads it, and why women especially engage so much with it.
So if we had to describe domestic noir, it would be fiction set in the home, in a domestic setting, with a dark undertone. How would you describe it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say it's a distinctive female point of view that is usually told. Sometimes it's also from the point of view of a man as well, with a woman as well. So, for example, Gone Girl would be that example. And it's very much a critique, I think, of today's society and how women are treated still quite unequally in the society.
Would you say there's something feminist about domestic noir?
I think it's quite difficult to say that because especially in my reading groups, there's a lot of different conversation about is it feminist, is it not? I would say yes, there is a feminist angle to it, but it's sometimes difficult to really distinguish that.
So let's talk a bit about the reading group. So it's at the Jubilee Library, and how long has it been running for?
So actually, as the main three reading groups are at Jubilee Library, mm-hmm. But I've also had reading groups in Patcham Library, Hove Library, and Molscombe Library, mm-hmm. so all across Brighton, Hove, really. And I had 5 to 7 participants in each group. They're all women, and we get together every 2 weeks to discuss one domestic noir book. So it was over 4 months from February to July last year, and I do the last book group. This next few months now.
So could you name 3 books that you guys have reviewed?
So the main domestic noir books we read, so it's Gone Girl, The Girl on the Train, but also Julia Crouch's book, Her Husband's Lover, which is, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And what is the reaction? What do people react to the most in novels?
That's actually the main focus of my research at the moment, and that's the, in my opinion, the revenge aspect of the books. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the books end in the woman killing her husband or her boyfriend or partner, and it's kind of the catharsis of he's been abusing her, he's been treating her badly, and she kills him at the end, and she gets away with it.
Yeah. So you're running another a crime fiction book club. Can you, for anyone that's interested in joining it, maybe tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so it kind of came from the domestic noir reading groups, because mm-hmm. All the women kind of wanted to continue reading crime fiction together. And we said we open it up not only as domestic noir, but as crime fiction. And we invite everyone that would like to read with us so we can continue discussing crime fiction.
And how can we find you in order to do that?
You can contact the Jubilee Library mm-hmm. and they'll get you in touch with me. Or you can just contact me on Twitter at Kat Hendricks.
Amazing. Thank you very much. So you're going to stick around when we talk about My Sister, the Serial Killer. And we still have Ellie Griffiths in the studio, which is very nice. So I'm going to read from the blurb before I bring these two in to talk about this very interesting and alternative crime novel. When Karidi's dinner is interrupted one night by a distress call from her sister, Ayula, she knows what's expected of her. Bleach, rubber gloves, nerves of steel, and a strong stomach. This is the third boyfriend Ayula's dispatched in, quote, self-defense, and the third mess that her lethal little sibling has left Karede to clear away. She should probably go to the police for the good of the menfolk of Nigeria, but she loves her sister and, as they say, family always comes first. Until, that is, Ayula starts dating the doctor where Karede works as a nurse. Karede's long been in love with him and isn't prepared to see him wind up with a knife in his back, but to save one would mean sacrificing the other. Katerina, let's start with you. What did you think of this novel?
I read it in, I think, probably 3 hours.
Wow.
I kind of, yeah, just flew through it. I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. I definitely think it's domestic noir, in my opinion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that after the blurb, actually, and then when I read it, I was like, yes. there's definitely an aspect to it that is domestic noir. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I think I might include it in my research actually now.
Excellent. Ellie, what was your reaction to this book?
It's got the most amazing start, I think, this book. It really is. It throws you straight in, the fact that immediately the sisters having to clear up this man who's been killed and just get rid of his body. And there's something so kind of awful and visceral about it, the fact they have to scrub away with bleach and then they carry his body out. And then they have to, I mean, I'm not giving anything away, as this happens right in the first chapter. Then they have to sort of press for the lift. And I thought that was such a clever moment, to drop his body, press for the lift, get him in the lift. And it's just the most incredible start. And like Katerina, actually, I read it on the train, London to Brighton train, and I did almost finish it in one journey. It does help that, you know, the trains are quite often delayed, but I just whizzed through it. You know, it's a gallop through, short chapters, really sort of quite sparsely told, isn't it? But I think that just makes you go even faster as a reader.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I thought was also interesting is there's absolutely no mystery in it,
no,
whatsoever, but it still kind of manages to be compelling, even though you're not waiting to find that much out at the end. It's more of a will she rather than who did she?
Yes. What will she do next?
Yes, exactly.
Is the horror,
will she be found out? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And do we want her to be found out? That's
yes,
another
exactly.
issue, isn't it?
Did you like the characters?
I think I really sometimes I felt I wished it had been written by the other sister, because I would quite like to know what was in her head. Mm. But I don't know if I liked them, but I certainly engaged with them, which I think is what you need, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My friend Sarah, who runs the Books and Rhymes podcast, who was on last month's show, said that this was a gateway book, which I actually thought was a really nice way to describe it, because it's such a quick read. And it's not particularly short, but it's a quick read, and it's very easy to engage in. You don't have to do too much. There's kind of no pretension to it, which I thought was really refreshing in a kind of sea of quite often quite pretentious, overrated books at the moment. I also thought there was something quite feminist to it. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of that is what you just asked about the likability of the characters. I don't think they're likable. Mm. But I think that's part of it, that women don't have to be likable necessarily. And you do things for different reasons that don't need to necessarily be explained to the reader or the audience.
And, you know, these sisters do live, and this is made very clear, in this society that treats women very badly and treats them as commodities. They're abused by their father, and they are both, it's very clear that they're seen, one sister's the beautiful one doesn't see herself as beautiful, and they're really much rated by that. Mm-hmm. And I think in its, as you say,
I know it doesn't really, you know, there's no sort of high-flown writing, but in its very plain way, it does lay that out in front of you, doesn't it? That that they are kind of commodities. And absolutely. So there is a slight element, and really interesting what Katerina was saying earlier on about domestic noir and revenge, because in a way you do kind of want them to take their revenge on that society, don't you? Yeah,
absolutely. What would you both recommend if you liked this book, or in general, a kind of crime or thriller or any novel that you've read recently that you would recommend to the listeners of the show?
Oh, that's sort of thrown into the conversation, isn't it? Well, I think you were quite right about this in a way, slightly being a sort of gateway book. And I would say maybe Gillian Flynn, not so much Gone Girl, but I really like Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn.
Yes, which recently adapted as well.
I think that's a great book. And the other one I think is called Dark Places, is it the third one in the Dark Places as well? So I would maybe, I think they are books as well that really take you on a journey, but there's something... They're very dark, but they're also very well written and very funny. So I maybe would recommend Gillian Flynn, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Gillian Flynn is probably one of the best domestic noir authors, in my opinion. But also Sarah Pinborough. I absolutely love her books. They're great. Behind Her Eyes is probably my favourite one. Yeah.
That's really good. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining me on the actual book club section of the Brighton Book Club. Next month on the book club, we're talking poetry with Costa long-listed poet John McCullough, emerging poet Lucy Cage, performance poet Rachel Shorer, and Brighton-based Jackie Wills. We also have some very special footnotes coming up with Elizabeth Haynes, crime writer extraordinaire. We're also going to be interviewing Cecilia Knapp after the Brighton run of her show. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get yours to hear them. Thank you to everyone who came on the show today. I want to hear about your favourite poems before next month's show. So make sure you get in touch with them so we can discuss them on the show. I have a list here of great crime events going on. We have Crime Rave with Emily Elgar, Stephanie Robel and Matt Osman on the 17th of March at Brighton Waterstones. The Brighton Crime Rave is also going to be on the 14th of April with John Connolly and Jane Casey. Another crime wave with lovely Ellie Griffiths, William Shaw and Leslie Thompson's book launch on Thursday the 7th of May, and also an evening with Jeffrey Deaver on the 21st of May. Like I said, you can follow them at BTN Crime Wave to find out all the updates. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next month talking poetry.